A translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sukadev Goswami continued, upon Lord Shiva's drinking the poison, both the demigods and the demons, being very pleased, began to churn the ocean with renewed vigor. As a result of this, there appeared a cow known as Surabhi. This is now the purport. The Surabhi cow is described as Havirdhani, the source of butter. Butter, when clarified by melting, produces ghee, or clarified butter, which is inevitably necessary for performing great ritualistic sacrifices. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 18.5, Yagya Dana Tapa Karma Na Twajyam Karma Eva Tat. Sacrifice, charity, and austerity are essential to keep human society perfect in peace and prosperity. Yagya, the performance of sacrifice, is essential. To perform yagya, clarified butter is absolutely necessary. And to get clarified butter, milk is necessary. Milk is produced when there are sufficient cows. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita 18.44 mentions, cow protection is recommended. Shri Gauraksha Vaniyam Vaisya Karma Swabhava Jam. So we could just say the Mangal Charan prayers. Om Agyana Terimandascha Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksharo Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Nama Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karameyam Nadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sagana Raghunatam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Visakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopikakanta Radhakanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrinda Veneshwari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Vancha Kalpa Tirubhasya Kripa Sindhu Avevacha Patitanam Pavnebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Naminem Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Prachanine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Vasatyadeshatanine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So just to repeat the translation again, Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, Lord Shiva's drinking the poison, both the demigods and the demons, being very pleased, began to churn the ocean with renewed vigor. As a result of this, there appeared a cow name known as Surabhi. Hare Krishna. So first of all, I'd like to seek all the devotees' blessings. It's my first time singing on the Vyasa San, so I feel very humbled because there's all these great Vaishnavas in front of me. But I see this as my purification, and also it gave me the opportunity to kind of fine-tune my prayers, you know. Today was the first time I intensely actually recited this verse. I want to just seek your blessings. And also, Bhajranga Prabhu, I want to thank him also because he kind of empowered me. He was just saying, give a class. It's about time you give a class. And I thought, okay, why not? You know, at the end, at least I get a Mahaprasad plate, you know. It's very rare you get that, you know. So, no fruits and sweet, please. Thank you. Sorry. So, back to the story. So, actually, this is one of my very favorite pastimes because it's very interesting. So many lessons could be actually derived from this. So, as you know, the chapter is called Churning of the Milk Ocean. And just so that I can tell you a little brief story of how the whole story began, it all actually began with Lord Indra. One day, Indra Dev was actually riding on his elephant, Airavat, and Durvasa Muni, somehow or the other, was also there. And he wanted to actually bless Indra Dev, and therefore he actually gave him his own garland. And he placed a garland on Lord Indra, but Lord Indra was a little pride. He was too proud and a little puffed up. So he didn't actually receive the garland very properly. And therefore he just kind of disrespectfully put the garland on the elephant. Elephant being a mere animal, he actually then started, you know, to like kind of disrespect the garland also. He started stamping on them, stepping on and destroying it. Now we all know what the mood of Durvasa Muni. He's known for his anger. And therefore, when he saw this, he became really furious, you know. And therefore, Durvasa Muni cursed Indra. And he goes that you're going to now become bereft of all opulences. So therefore, a war took place between the demons and the demigods. And in this war, obviously, because of the curse, the demigods actually lost everything. The demons became victorious and they took over everything the demigods had. So now the demigods were actually frustrated because, you know, they were bereft of all their opulences. And therefore, what do the demigods do when they're in crisis? They go to Lord Brahma, right? They go to Lord Brahma and they start, you know, presenting their case. Lord Brahma also becomes very curious and very concerned. So then Lord Brahma then started, generally what happens is Lord Brahma then also approaches the Lord himself, Lord Vishnu. And Lord Brahma started offering beautiful prayers to Lord Vishnu. The Lord then appeared and he advised that because of the condition, the demigod's condition due to the time factor, they should actually make truce with the demigods, with the demons. And so the Lord Vishnu was advising the demigods to make truce with the enemy to get this nectar. And then Lord, in this purport, the previous chapters mentioned that he gives the analogy of the snake and a mouse. He's saying that, you know, like sometimes you have to make enemies with your friend, you have to make allies with your enemies to get whatever you want. And he gives this analogy of the snake and the mouse, how the snake and the mouse were actually trapped. And the mouse is the food for the snake. And so the snake came up with a scheme. He told the mouse that why don't you eat a hole in this net so we can both escape. But his intention was that the mouse can actually create a hole. So then not only can he escape, but he can also eat the mouse also. So the Lord gave them this advice that make truce with the demigods, so that, you know, with the demons, so that you can actually get this nectar. And so therefore Lord Indra approaches who? The king of demigod, the king of demons, who's that? Bali Maharaj. Okay. So this class is gonna be quite interactive, so feel free to actually respond. It's not just gonna be one way. It's easier for me. Okay. So it's Bali Maharaj actually. And so Bali Maharaj then contemplated on this idea and he actually thought it was a good idea. So then both of them decided to actually go for this proposal. Lord Vishnu actually advised to the demigods that get all the vegetables, get all the creepers and all the drugs and throw it into the milk ocean, you know. Then he advised that pick up the Mount Mandara and you use Mount Mandara as a churning rod. And he advised them that use Vasuki as a rope for churning. So the Lord advised this to the demigods and demons and they started performing this task. So then what happens is both the demigods and demons picked up the mountain. But the mountain was made out of gold, so it was really, really heavy. It was super heavy. So while they were carrying it, the mountain actually collapsed and it killed many demons and demigods. The Lord saw this and he comes with Garuda and he lifts the mountain up and he revives all the dead demigods and demons also. And then he actually carries the Mandara mountain to the milk ocean, ready to be churned. So when they go to the milk ocean, while they're churning using Vasuki, the Mandara mountain actually again sinks into the bottom of the ocean. So again, the Lord appears as who? Yeah, okay. You guys are well versed. Maybe you should give classes. Yes, Kurma comes. It's mentioned that actually Kurma had an urge. He had a scratch in his back. So he thought, okay, let me become a tortoise and, you know, fulfill this task. And he does that. And so therefore, Kurma is the one who actually keeps the mountain in place. And then churning began. And through this churning, many things comes out. And then the first thing that comes out is poison. It's called the hala hala poison, you know. And through that poison, what happens is that, and you know, I don't want to go into too much details, but Lord Shiva then drinks his poison. And after the poison is gone, the first thing that comes out of the churning of the milk ocean is actually the Surabhi cow. And then that leads us to where we are today, you know. And so in the purport, so today's session, I was actually going to focus on one verse that Prabhupada actually mentions in the purport, which is from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18.5. So we all know that chapter 18 is the last chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And Arjuna, beginning of this chapter, asked the same question again. You know, he asked about renunciation. Is renunciation better or work? You know, and he asked again because he knows this is the last chapter before the war was going to happen. And therefore, Krishna explains this concept in a more deeper perspective. So it's mentioned that, so I just want to read this verse that Prabhupada actually quotes in this purport and also the translation. So this verse actually goes, Yagya dana tapa karma na twajyam karyam evatat yagya danam tapas cheva bhavanani manasinam. So here the translation is, acts of sacrifice, charity and penance are not to be given up. They must be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity and penance purify even the great souls. So in this purport, one line that stood out to me and Prabhupada emphasized on is something is pavanani manissanam. It actually talks about purification, that how it's very important to actually have purified consciousness. And this can only happen in the human form of life. So it's mentioned that only when one has a human form of life can one has opportunity to actually purify his consciousness, right? And the only way you can actually achieve this goal is by performing these three things, yagya, dana, and tapa. So today's session, I'm just going to actually briefly talk about these three things and what does it mean to us, etc. So it's mentioned that, so first I'm going to start with charity. It's mentioned that charity, actually, the purpose of charity is actually purification of the heart. When someone actually gives in charity, what that signifies is that you're actually detached from the results or detached from enjoying the fruits of the work that you perform. In the Bhagavad Gita, we also learn that in the 17th chapter, Krishna explains that charities are done in different modes also. And, you know, it's mentioned that in the mode of goodness, charity in the mode of goodness is actually when you perform charity out of duty or you don't expect anything back in return and you give it to a worthy person. Charity in mode of passion, Krishna explains, is that you're actually performing charity because you want to expect something back in return. And charity in a mode of ignorance is actually when you perform charity in an impure place, at improper time, and to an unworthy person. So when I first heard this concept, this was at university, so the devotee explained to me how this actually relates, and he gave me like a real-life example of how charity can be in different modes. And typical example is when you see a beggar on a street. Now, in a beggar on the street, you may give him money and just randomly give him £10 note. Now, that's charity in mode of ignorance because you don't know where the money is being spent. He could be spending on drugs, alcohol, whatever. So that's charity in mode of ignorance. And another way is like, you know, you can actually do something good for that homeless person, but then you're expecting some sort of like, you know, something in return or like that feel good factor or check me out, you know, I'm so good, etc. You know, and the mode of goodness, charity mode of goodness is actually giving the homeless person food. That's a real charity because, you know, food is a necessity of life. And when you give that, then you know that's going to be utilized in the right way. So I remember when I went to, in between my uni, I took a year out and I traveled to East Africa. I went with the festival team. So we spent few months in East Africa and we traveled around Kenya, Uganda, Rwanda, Congo, and Tanzania. And once we were actually doing some shopping for a festival that we were doing. And just before I entered the shopping mall, I saw this little kid, right, really cute. He was actually a homeless kid. He was living off the streets with, like, you know, clothes all torn. And he had a bottle in his hand. It wasn't alcohol. But in Africa, because the kids, you know, the food is not so easily available, these kids, they can easily get something called glue. It's like an intoxicant, which is like a substitute for hunger. So if they sniff on this glue, they don't feel so hungry. So I knew this concept, and I saw the bottle, and he was begging me for money. So then, you know, I walked in the supermarket, and I thought of this analogy. I thought, okay, you know, what can I do to help this kid? And so I came back, and I bought him some loads of food, and I gave him the food. But I told him, throw the bottle away, and then take the food. So he throws the bottle away, I give him the food, I jump in the car, I'm driving off, and I look around, that he not only does he take the food, but he goes back to pick up the bottle also. And it made me start questioning that, you know, what is real charity we can actually perform in this world, you know? And it's mentioned that even like so many different charity organizations we see that they actually perform charity to actually overcome three kleshas. Like we all know that there are three kleshas, three miseries in this material. You have adibhautik, adiatmika, exactly. So if you actually think about it, Adi Bhautika, Adi Atmika, Adi Devika. So misery is caused by your own body and your mind. Misery is caused by other living entities. And misery is caused by the demigods in the form of earthquake or natural disasters. Most charities that are about here today in this modern society generally come in the mode of passion and ignorance, you know. And the problem with the charity organization nowadays is that they do help to a certain extent. However, they cannot tackle or focus on all three kleshas at the same time, and the result of this charity is temporary. So it's mentioned that even nowadays, this is Kali Yuga, it's mentioned that charities actually, as time progresses, different ages progresses, everything declines and charity is one of them. It was mentioned in the Golden Age, all the living entities used to give everything to God. Then as time progresses in Chet Yuga, people made this scheme that, you know, we'll draw a circle. Everything that goes in the circle, God can have, you know. And then as Dwapara Yuga progressed, they thought, oh, we're giving too much to God. So they drew a line and they said, whatever's on the right-hand side is God's, whatever's on the left-hand side is ours. And then when Kali Yuga comes about, people say, we'll throw everything up in the air. Whatever God catches is his and the rest is ours. You know, this is a typical chapati masala, right? I just had to clarify that. It's not mine at all. It's mentioned that actually the highest perfection of charity in society that we can perform is actually the immunity from the anxiety of material existence. So in other words, preaching. Preaching or giving Krishna consciousness is actually the real solution that can actually help one overcome these three miseries that we spoke about. You know, and within this preaching, the basic necessity is taken care of anyways. And that's why it's very important, the process of preaching and why it's the topmost activity, topmost charity for mankind. Once Bhavananda Prabhu was asking Prabhupada the meaning of his name. And Prabhupada said, Bhavananda actually means one who takes pleasure in transcendental emotions. But he goes, Bhavananda, which was his name, means taking pleasure in the material world. So Bhavananda Prabhu was like a little baffled. He's like, Prabhupada, is this a curse or a benediction? You know, it's like, what, taking pleasure in the material world? What's all that about? So then Prabhupada clarifies that actually it is only in the material world, in the Kali Yuga, especially during the Golden Age, that one can actually taste the nectar of preaching. And that's what Prabhupada is referring to. In the spiritual, there is no preaching. No need to do Sankirtan, you know. I mean, no, Sankirtan happens, don't get me wrong. Of course Sankirtan happens. But preaching as in preaching to the people in general, you know, everyone knows the Bhagavad Gita in the spiritual world, you know. But there's no need for that. That taste for preaching only comes here in the material world. And that's what Srila Prabhupada was actually referring to. You know, so the highest form of charity is mentioned is actually preaching Krishna consciousness to others, and this is the real welfare activity for others. And Prabhupada has actually designed the whole process so nicely, as I mentioned, that basic necessities of life is also taken care of. One thing we do is, of course, food for life. You know, so that's charity. The other category that, you know, I wanted to actually briefly speak about was actually Tapa. Tapa, when tapa comes to your mind, austerity, what's the first thing that comes to your head? Ekadashi. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Ekadashi is austere, huh? But you do nirjal anyways, right? Oh, no. But you do fast. Sometimes, okay. Yeah, generally when we think about austerity, it's something that people really don't look forward to, you know? People generally think austerity means cold showers, you know, boring, not having any fun, hard life, you know, austerities of the body, unnecessary austerity. But the austerity that Krishna or Prabhupada mentions or talks about in this purport is actually, he's talked about, it's called tapo divyam, or which means that austerity, that's a little different. Austerity, that's divine. And I'm going to briefly talk about that concept here, actually. It's actually mentioned that, you know, Prabhupada actually says and explains that whether you're a materialist or a spiritualist, we all know that everyone has one purpose in life, which is pleasure. It's mentioned we're spirit souls and we are pleasure-seeking by nature. It is our constitution position to be happy because the soul's nature is such it, ananda, eternal, full of knowledge, and you're blissful. You know, but the problem happens is that we should look for happiness that's actually really truly satisfying, you know, because we know this material world is full of problems and you know, things like birth, old age, death, disease, all this stuff, because of this, it actually stops us from being happy. Prabhupada explains that, you know, as living entities, we are selfish, you know, living into this condition, living into this selfish, you know. And he goes that actually, to be really selfish means to know what is your self-interest, right? And if you understand what your self-interest is, you will automatically become selfless. Because your self-interest is basically understanding that you're the spirit soul and you're part and parcel of God. Just like a leaf is part and parcel of a tree, just like a finger is part and parcel of the body. You know? And so Prabhupada explains that self-interest for a thirsty leaf is watering the root. Right? Self-interest for the hungry finger is actually putting food in the stomach. So similarly, self-interest for the living entity is actually pleasing Krishna and engaging in devotional service. And therefore, you know, And the process of devotional service itself is actually how you can actually become selfless and you can actually get that real happiness that everyone's really looking for. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada explains that actually austerity means voluntarily accepting something, some physical inconveniences for spiritual advancement. You know, and he's mentioned that when austerity is performed in the right way in Krishna consciousness, austerity actually becomes a joyful process, you know? Not only is it a joyful process, but it's also self-purifying at the same time. And it's mentioned that austerity is like having a shower. Just like how a shower gets rid of all the dirtiness and you know, it kind of purifies your consciousness, austerity is also like that. And the word tapa actually is a Sanskrit terminology which refers to heat. Just like heat purifies gold and brings about its luster, similarly, austerity, not only does it purify the contaminated soul from dirty things, but it also brings about its spiritual luster, you know? And it's mentioned, actually, the real austerity in life is actually the advancement of human society in general by upliftment of their consciousness, you know? That is real austerity. You know, the process of giving Krishna consciousness to others or preaching in one sense is austerity in itself. And you know, when austerity is performed, Jai Shishi Radha Gokulananda Ki, Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki, Gonita Ki, Jai. So, real austerity is actually preaching also. Because when we actually perform austerity by giving Krishna consciousness to others, it's mentioned that one's consciousness is uplifted. And you know, this process is really wonderful and very powerful because last year I was traveling with my spiritual master, Chandramani Maharaj, and one thing we did was we did a prison program, you know, and I never thought I'd see a day where I'd actually go into a prison, you know. When I first told my mom, oh, I went to prison, she was shocked, you know. I'm like, mom, relax, don't get too excited. I wasn't in prison as an inmate, but I went there to kind of help out sort of thing. So Maharaj does this program, Chandramani Maharaj does this ISKCON prison ministry where he goes and he preaches to the inmates. And so this was my first-hand experience of what it was like going to a prison and experiencing how Krishna consciousness worked, you know. And so I met many prisoners, and these prisoners, inmates, actually performed the most heinous act you can actually think of. And I was so shocked that, you know, this wonderful process of Krishna consciousness can bring about such a transformation to people like that, that I was really moved, and I felt like, you know, this is really a powerful process. I thought this process works for me, but I wasn't so sure that it works for everyone around. But by going to this prison, it was quite interesting. I once started talking to this inmate. Like American prisons, everyone's like, tonk, like, you don't mess with them. You know, so there's one inmate, I approached him and I started talking to him, and he goes, his name is Randall, you know. So he goes, I'm a Native American. And so, you know, I didn't know much about American history, you know. So I vaguely remember Native American, Red Indian. So I said, oh, you're a Red Indian, basically. Now, you don't call a Native American Red Indian. It's a super offense, I'm telling you. Luckily, I did not get a black eye, you know, because he was practicing Krishna consciousness and, you know, performing compassion, etc. But I think I saw he was a little disturbed. But then I kind of tried to style it out. Oh, I'm sorry, I don't know much about American history. You know, tell me more about it. So anyways, he told me about his background. This inmate actually had issues with anger management. He used to get angry with everything. And he actually wanted self-respect. If anybody does not show him self-respect, he would actually beat them up, basically. So because of that, he got in prison many times. This was the third time he was in prison, he was telling me. And just previous month before that, he was living in like an intensive cell. This is for inmates who actually perform, who are very, let's say, not so civilized. So they perform, they get really intense, you know, measurements there. So they have to stay in the cell for 6 months, you know, just to get, you know, as a form of punishment. So anyways, he was telling me that this process of Bhagavad Gita is very powerful. Before I was thinking that I need to be respected. But when I read Bhagavad Gita, I realized the importance of humility. You know, he goes, I really need to start applying these principles of humility, you know, if I want to advance in spirituality. And he was saying that many times I was tested also. He started going to yoga groups, and once he was like standing there, you know, getting ready to do yoga, and another inmate steps right in front of him, you know. And so this Randall guy goes to the other inmate, excuse me, mate, you're in my way. And so, you know, in the prisons, everyone has a lot of ego bashing there, you know. So this other inmate goes, nah, I don't think so, mate. You know, and this Randall was furious. He was about to beat him up, but then he started contemplating that I'm here in this yoga session to actually control my mind and senses. You know, so he started having introspection, and then he actually thought before he acted. You know, and he decided that maybe I shouldn't do this. He took the humble approach and moved to another side. You know, and then he thought afterwards, I felt so much better by not acting upon my emotions, you know. And the questions that people were asking at this program were so powerful. It was like really sincere, devotional questions they were asking Maharaj. They were saying, but you know, I really want to try and perform, you know, Krishna consciousness, but it's very difficult. And how do I do this? And how do I make my chanting better? And practicing Krishna consciousness in prison, it's not an easy job. It made me realize that we're so fortunate to practice, you know, where there's so much freedom. You know, in prison itself, it's like intense. And to practice Krishna consciousness, that's a whole new ball game. You know, so it made me realize how this process can transform so many people's consciousness. And this is actually what's needed in society, you know, Krishna consciousness. And that's the real austerity that one can perform. You know, so that's austerity. And then the next thing that Krishna talks about, or Prabhupada talks about in the Bhagavad Gita, is actually yajna. Now, in this purport is quite interesting because is used the word Havidhani, source of butter. Now, Prabhupada didn't mention, he didn't say the word butter because it tastes good with toast, you know. There's a reason why he mentions butter, you know. Havi actually means, I looked into this meaning of what Havi means. Havi actually, by definition, means that it's a place where all the items for oblation is kept. And Dhani actually means the resting place. So Havidhani means a place where the necessity items for offering is kept. So basically butter, ghee, cow is very essential for this, you know. And so this is why when the cow was the first thing that came out, it was very significant. You know, it's quite symbolic because after the cow, so many beneficial stuff came out. When the Surabhi clouds came, many other benefit stuff came out from there, you know. And it's mentioned that, you know, yajna is one of those things that, you know, it's mentioned that we have to perform. There's so many yajnas out there that we perform. Like, I don't know, like you have Putra Yajna. You know, in the scriptures it's mentioned there's Putra Yajna. Dasharatha Maharaj performed Putra Yajna to get Lord Ram and the four brothers. Then there is, of course, the Rajasuya sacrifice that Maharaj Yudhishthira performed, right? And there's so many different yajnas that are out there. And nowadays, there's a very popular question that people ask that, you know, Vedic scriptures, you put down, you know, you throw in so many grains, you waste so many grains, ghee, butter, all these expensive items. Why? So that it gets burned to ashes? Isn't it waste of money? You know, you're just like, you know, putting in fire and it just gets burnt down. Isn't that waste of money? You know, so it's mentioned that those who doesn't have the information about the significance of yajna, they will not understand. It's mentioned just like in human society, you know, the government provides many utilities and for that you have to pay taxes, correct? We pay taxes because the government actually provides us many different utilities for our usage, you know, like in this country, education, national health insurance, etc., services, you know. So similarly, it's mentioned that the universal government or the demigods are also providing us so many necessities in life. Now you can think about what are the necessities that nature provides us. Air, water, food, right? So many things. Jewels, you know, grains, all this stuff. You know, they actually produce this. So then, you know, it's mentioned, I read an article that if we had to actually get an invoice from Mother Nature for all the things she provides, the bill will actually come to about between $16 trillion to $54 trillion in between that. That would be what the bill would be for mankind to pay Mother Nature. But, you know, Vedic system is kind. You know, all you have to do is perform yajnas. Because yajna is very important. Yajna is the way by which, you know, it's like a reciprocation between us and the demigods. Demigods are the people who actually administrate the whole universe. It's because of them things work very nicely. And when we perform yajna, they're satisfied and they look after us. The moment we stop yajna, you know, the demigods will stop providing us all the necessity things that we need in life. And when demigods stop looking after us, protection's lost and demoniac tendency will rise. And that's what we'll see in society nowadays, that everything doesn't function so very well because yajna is not being performed. You know, we see that, you know, there's global warming. We see there's untimely, you know, weather also, different types of food. You know, nowadays even food is, you know, we have to go and buy for organic food. Back in the days, organic food used to just grow. You didn't have to go to shop to buy all these things, you know. And therefore it's mentioned that, you know, yajna in today's age cannot be performed how they used to do it. For two reasons, because first of all, it's very expensive, and second reason is that we don't have the qualified priest that can actually recite these intricate mantras. So it's mentioned the yajna for this age is... wonderful, you guys already came to the conclusion without me even saying it to you. Yes, it's mentioned Harinam Sankirtan is the yajna for this age. It's mentioned that the fire in the yajna is actually represents the Maha Mantra, and the... So the fire in the yajna actually represents the Maha Mantra, and the offering spoon actually represents your tongue. You know, the offering spoon we offer in the yajna, that represents the tongue. And it's mentioned the ghee that's used in the yajna, it actually represents our consciousness. Like that, you know, it actually represents our consciousness. So it's mentioned that, you know, yajna is very important. You know, and it's mentioned that material world is full of faults. Kaliyuga is full of faults. You know, there's so many things. But one benediction it does have is a chanting of the holy name. Just by chanting the holy name, you can actually get the highest perfection in life. You know? And so when you actually analyze the whole thing, yajna, dana, tapa, when you preach and practice Krishna consciousness, all of these three things are encapsulated. So you don't have to actually make personal, individual endeavors to perform it. You know? It's mentioned that our spiritual practice and our sadhana, chanting 16 rounds, etc., is actually like the yajna. And when we go out and preach and give Krishna consciousness to others, it's actually mentioned that that's like dana. You know? And our lifestyle and the principles that we live by is actually represents tapasya. Like that. You know? And so, that was just, you know, just a little bit of an introduction to that concept. And one thing I really actually want to end this talk with was, you know, the importance of cow. Cow is a very sacred thing in human society. And even if you look at Krishna's pastime, you know, it's mentioned that they also valued cow very much as well. You know, we understand that when Krishna was 3 years old, you know, Krishna started herding the cows. You know, at the age of three, Maharaj Nanda and Yashoda Mai, they actually gave them cows to herd. And at the age of three, they did a big ceremony where Krishna was given a stick, you know, and like, you know, buffalo horn so that they can go herding the cows. The cow is very sacred. It's known as, you know, mother because she produces milk, which is very essential to kind of, you know, purify the finer tissues in the brain, which can then help us take to Krishna consciousness, you know. So I think I'm going to end there because we've got a few minutes. Oh, no, we don't have a few minutes, I think, because devotees want to go and take prasad. So I'm not sure if we have time for question answer. But we definitely have time for comments. If there is comments, please feel free to ask. Or if you have questions, feel free also.